This title is Firearms Prevalence and Homicides of Law Enforcement Officers in the United States. That will be presented by Dr. David Switler, who is a research assistant professor in Environmental and Occupational Health Services at the University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health. His main research focus is injuries and injury risks in the workplace. Aside from occupational injuries, Dr. Switler has also conducted research on motor vehicle safety and sports injuries. Please join me to welcome Dr. David Switler.
Thanks, Morteza. So first off, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors. Dr. Simmons is here with us today. Dr. Hemingway is on the other side of the building giving another talk simultaneously, and Dr. Domenici really drove me hard on making the model that we did, so I have a lot of thanks to all of them. So I have no disclosures to make. This article came out in the October issue of American Journal of Public Health. All the references that I cite here you can find in there, and I believe this is actually an open access article, so this everyone should be able to access all these data freely. So, as you don't see, there are no citations on the bottom here. Like I said, they're all in the paper. The United States, in comparison to its peer nations, has a much higher homicide rate. A lot of this has been associated with firearm ownership, and we've seen in a series of studies, especially by Michael Siegel at Boston University, homicide rates in states, different types of homicides are associated with firearm ownerships in those states. For workers, since this is an occupational health population, occupational homicide is not a common cause of workplace injury for most groups, but for law enforcement officers in the U.S., it's the second leading cause of occupational mortality behind motor vehicle crashes. And LEOs in the U.S. have the third highest rate of occupational homicide, and 93% of these homicides are committed using firearms. And we saw in a previous study that we did, only 10% of these homicides are done with what's called a takeaway homicide, where the assailant takes the officer's gun and then kills him or her and then another officer with that firearm. So most of the time, vast majority of these homicides are being committed with firearms that are out in the public. So as I said, we did a previous study on this, and we got some general descriptive statistics on the types of gun used, the situations involved. We saw handguns were the vast majority. It was a lot of high-powered, high-caliber handguns. Long guns were less commonly used, but there were some certain situations where that popped up as a special risk. We're not going to focus on the type of gun today. We're just going to talk about gun use in general for these homicides. There has been sparse work done on predictors for officer homicides. Kaminsky conducted a couple of studies looking at risk factors for officer homicides, but they were done at the precinct or city level. So trying to generalize to that kind of work, you can only do it in a large city, you can only do it in a large county. Trying to do that at the national level, you'd be excluding all the small counties, all the small places, and the majority of officer homicides in this country are not happening in the biggest cities. I mean, there are many homicides in big cities of officers, but they are happening all throughout the country, so we can't just say it's clustering the big cities, so we'll just look at the big cities. There was another study that was conducted comparing London, England to New York City. Both have about 8 million people, or 8 million people working there, and they compared homicide rates and gun violence deaths of officers in these two cities. They found that officers in New York City were 20 times more likely to die by firearm compared to their peers in London, England. So again, sparse evidence looking at risk factors for officer homicide on the job. So we chose the state level as our level of analysis. One reason for this is that states set gun policy. So there might be variation within a state, but the state level is where you have your purchase, carry, registration laws being set. And gun ownership, therefore, varies across state lines. And officer homicides are infrequent count events. So if we wanted to look at a large enough level for us to do a good statistical analysis, we need enough cases in a place. And so rather than just conducting a series of case studies on individual homicides, which, again, very detailed, and that's something a little bit of what we did in the injury prevention article back in 2014, but using the state level allows us to analyze at a statistically significant size. And there's a special reason why firearms are a risk to officers. So criminal intent theory would tell us that we need to have a motivated individual with sufficient window to commit a crime. And to kill an officer is a very difficult task. They're trained, they're equipped, they have their own guns, they're often working in pairs, they're in a vehicle. It's hard to kill an officer. But the gun creates an expanded window of opportunity for killing. An assailant with a gun is going to be more likely to have sufficient time and space to commit a lethal injury in comparison to an individual who has personal weapons, that is hands, fists, feet, or a vehicle, or a knife. So that's why we're really interested in the risk of guns towards officers, because the increased lethality of a gun assault. So this is the purpose that we have stated in the article, and our hypothesis was that there's going to be a positive association of firearm ownership at the state level with officer homicide rates. All the data for the study, publicly available, free to download, so anyone who disagrees can go ahead and download the data for free, but it is all publicly available data. We obtained homicides of officers from the FBI's Law Enforcement Officer Killed and Assaulted Report, LEOKA. We were able to download detailed homicide reports from the ICPSR. We got all homicides by year and by state, and we collected data from 1996 to 2010. The total number of officers per state served as our baseline rate for our analysis. This came from another FBI database that's called Police Employment, and so we had every officer in every state in every year, and so that's how we were able to calculate our rates, and we used homicides per 10,000 officers per state, which is, you know, a standard occupational measure that we'd use for occupational mortality. We collected violent crime rates as well because we thought, you know, if it's not the firearms, maybe it's the fact that officers in these states are more commonly encountering violent crimes. And if that's the case, we better control for that. So we also got violent crime data from the FBI, from their another report called The Crime in the United States, used the violent crime rates. And again, we use this, obtain this annually for each state over the entire study period. To analyze firearm ownership, we use two methods. The gold standard is the CDC's BRFSS survey. So in amongst the humongous 200-question survey or whatever it is, in these 3 years, they ask, is a gun present in the home, yes or no? Not how many guns or what type of guns, or are they legal or illegal guns, just is there a gun present, yes or no? And so that was our main measurement of gun ownership across the entire study period. This is a cross-sectional measure. We couldn't measure this year to year to year. It is limited in that way, but again, this is the gold standard that's been used. So we measured it in a second way. We have a proxy measure for firearm ownership from the CDC's Whiskers database. It's called the FS over S ratio, or the FSS ratio. Essentially, if a house has a firearm and an individual seeks to commit suicide, they will use that firearm to commit suicide because it's the most lethal effective means. And so this measure is another way to assess firearm ownership rates within a state. And so in our study, we found that BRFSS and Whiskers data had a very high correlation to one another. So two methods collected annually are collected in a block, and we find good correlation between the two. There's a limitation to this. The small states have very high variability in their FSS counts, so that's why we couldn't say this is the gold standard. The BRFSS is still the gold standard that we used. So our main analysis was Poisson regression of state firearm ownership over the 15-year study period, and we used the number of officers as an offset term. So essentially what we were doing was analyzing homicides per 10,000, but the Poisson gives us count data. Model 1, we used just firearm ownership and violent crime rates to put that in there. And then Model 2, which we'll be reporting today, is those first two variables in Model 1 plus select covariates that have been shown to be associated with state-level homicide rates. And these generally came from the Siegel studies that I referenced earlier. The covariate selection process was in-depth. As I mentioned, Dr. Domenici really pushed hard on this. If you'd like to read more about it, please see the paper. We go into great detail about why we selected these variables and the process by which we came to them. But these are the four other variables that were put into Model 2 along with firearm ownership and violent crime rates. So this is going to be our main cross-sectional analysis. We conducted a series of sensitivity analyses. The first four you see up there are cross-sectional, and the last one is longitudinal. We divide the study up into 3 5-year blocks to conduct a longitudinal analysis using the FSS ratio. So the results, here we have firearm ownership quintiles on the left and quintiles of officer homicides on the right. These images are also in the paper as well if you'd like to study them more closely. It's not a one-to-one match, but we see Alaska, Montana, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama in the top in both groups, and Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New York, and New Jersey in the bottom in both groups. So not one-to-one, but we do see some groups showing up, some states showing up in the top in both. We counted up from the top of those states with the most guns and those states with the least guns until we were able to get an equal number of officer years. And from that, we then said how many officers were killed in the states with the most guns and how many were killed in the least guns. The rate is three times higher when we compare 2.75 million officer years from the highest gun states to the lowest gun states. Our main result for Model 2, firearm ownership is associated with increased officer homicide rates, and this violent crime rate borders on P of 0.05, so we'll say it's right there. But when you average that we have 237,000 plus officers per state over the whole study period, a 10% increase in firearm ownership was associated with 10 additional homicides of officers over the whole study period. And our sensitivity analyses back this up, except for the very first one where we analyzed homicides per state population rather than workers, we found a similar association. And finally, oh, that box moved. What a shame. That box should be on the bottom on the firearms there. We find longitudinal association of firearm ownership and officer homicides. So, limitations of the study before I get to the conclusions. Neither measure is perfect for firearm ownership, but we had two measures derived from different sources, and they both turned up the same result. The model selection process, I will say, it is not perfect, but this is the first study that's ever been conducted on officer homicide rates at the state level. So I'd love to see someone do another study off this. Different selection, different covariates, please. I would love to see that as well. There was someone who did a critique of my model, an economist who is a fan of the gun industry, and while he had some good points, he wrote a horrendously terrible model that was just awful and not even worth our time today. But there are criticisms of this paper out there, and I'm willing to entertain legitimate criticisms of this paper for absolute sure. So, in conclusion, officers working in states with the most firearms are more at risk for being murdered on the job than their peers in states with lower guns. States with the highest gun ownership have three times the homicide rate of those states with the lowest gun ownership, and a 10% increase was associated with 10 additional firearms or 10 additional fatalities over the study period. So just one last thing. A week ago in this very building, the president gave a speech to the International Association of Police Chiefs. The White House Live tweeted out during his speech that he said this, and you can see the top quote there. Where did this data come from? Now you know. So, thank you very much. Yes?
So, Marion Miller from Seattle, Washington. Actually, that was one of my questions, was has this been presented to police officers to get their inclusion? Mm-hmm. And the other is that Representative Dickey, in 1986, a Republican from Arkansas, introduced mm-hmm. a legislation that restricts research funds mm-hmm. for anything that might mention gun loosening of that will increase research dollars for someone to do this study or other studies?
I did this study with just my funding from my postdoc. I was the Liberty Mutual postdoc at the time. I had no money to pay my co-authors, so there's no federal funds that went to this study. I'd just like to point that out first. I know. They're looking to, legislation has been introduced. I mean, the minority of the Congress has introduced this legislation to overturn the Dickey Amendment. We shall see what happens with that, of course. I wrote a article for the Police Chiefs magazine. Hopefully, it's been accepted, as in they asked me to write it. So that should be published shortly, but, I mean, there has been interest in this. I mean, the president said this to the International Association of Police Chiefs last week, and I mean, whatever you say about guns, guns are definitely a risk for officers. And we can say, don't research it or your research is bad, but guns are definitely a risk for officers, and there's no denying that. So whether or not this study will start the conversation or there will be no other research beyond this, this is what I present to you today. So, anything else? Yeah.
Well, because I know in Massachusetts, even though we have strict gun control laws and low rates of homicide, a lot of the deaths do occur from guns that are purchased in New Hampshire, Vermont, and less stringent laws. And is there anything in thought in your analysis? I know it would be good to look at where, you know, people living in the city, whether they own guns, but how that might influence the model. So I don't imagine that would be a good model for it, like strength.
I mean, the Siegel articles that we saw before were really good about being longitudinal models, and they had very strong year-to-year associations. And we didn't do that because our counts were so low. But I think a geographic analysis like that and say, all right, Massachusetts is a very tiny state in terms of total land mass, and its neighbors also have low gun ownership, except with one or two, Maine being the other exception. I mean, you could make that association and say, is there bleed across the state lines? And we know for New York City and Chicago, guns are coming up from the south, where it's much easier to get guns. So again, this study was not saying what are the public counts of guns, because as we know, there is no public count of guns in any state. These are measures that we have of guns, not asking did it come from Massachusetts or New Hampshire or Maine or Rhode Island, just is there a gun in this state? How can we assess that? So yeah, you make a good point. Yeah?
I was wondering if you look at a correlation of this with the overall death rate from guns. I guess about 57% of gun rate deaths are due to suicide, and you have accidental shootings about 15%. So the actual homicide rate from guns is about one-fifth of the total. I was wondering if there's any correlation with that in states as well. I mean, because the suicidality or
Well, we didn't assess that, but you bring up two good issues. First off is officers on the job have the means of suicide at their pocket at all times. So if they are suicidal on the job, they can complete a suicide at any time, essentially. We did not analyze suicide rates within states, but that would be confounded by our use of the FSS measure. So if we're going to assess suicide rates in a state and we're using a measure of suicide as a ratio for a predictor, that's going to be difficult. And so our model selection process was eliminating variables that were too associated or just the right amount of association. And we've written the whole thing in the article, and there were other ones that I didn't list here that we selected out of that showed up to be significant associations to general homicide rates in the state. But I mean, please, I mean, yeah. Well, I think the fact that people have been talking more in the past couple of months about the effect of guns on suicide, and you know, guns aren't just homicide weapons; they are the suicide weapon. And the reason I think that if inroads are going to be made concerning gun control, suicide, pursuing suicide as a major issue is going to be very effective in convincing people that this is a big problem. So, do we have time for
time for one more question?
Yes.
In reference to the officers that you had in the study, did you look at their age or their level of experience that impacts?
Our previous study described their age and their years of experience, but we didn't look at that here in this study. No, our previous study we found that it was all range from like the rookie cop to the chief. So it's not just the average 35-year-old white male being killed on the job. It's a range of people. So,
if you have other questions, please ask David after the session. Thank you very much for your presentation.